to assist us with interpreting that, we'll be happy to hook you up with one of the next person probabilities and they will by fault or something that they will assist you in understanding, especially the one who's on the resolution. But I think basically this is a definition of the height from curb level. Of course, there are more complications in the building science, but from curb level to the height of the livable space, inside there's a relationship, usually one half of the livable space is above curb. I guess I can do that, but enjoy. So we first turn to the vote of the minutes from the September 15th, 2016 public meeting. Are there any corrections or comments to the minutes? Yes.
Yeah, I would just comment that I was very impressed with the added degree of transparency in the minutes and the detail that was provided. It's helpful for people reviewing what happens in the meeting. So,
thank you, Mr. Lane. We appreciate that. And that, of course, goes kudos to the law force staff and to Ms. Paulson. Thank you. Any other comments or corrections to the minutes? So do we have a motion to accept those minutes? This minute. Okay, Mr. Cobber. Thank you, Mr. Cobber. Is there a second? Mr. Roche. Thank you, Mr. Roche. Mr. Barrett, would you please call the board minute?
Mr. Cobber?
Yes.
Mr. Barrett?
Yes.
Mr. Roche?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney?
Yes.
Ms. Bolton-Rivera, Ms. Chacka,
abstain.
Ms. Sheldon?
Yes.
Chairperson Clayton?
Yes.
6 in favor, 1 abstain, and 1 absent.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Ms. Helen Bolton, Executive Chair of the Executive Director of the Law Firm of the Nine Pro Report.
The first thing I want to say is thank you. A couple of you reached out to me with suggestions in terms of the agenda and other things, so I just wanted you to know that I received the emails and we're working on incorporating those suggestions for future meetings. Know that we usually have a quarterly report of all of the pending cases. We decided to put that over till next month because we don't meet in November, so this way we can give you the totals for the year as to what happened during the year. So you can look forward to that next month. We have some, in terms of registrations, we are now down to 52 unregistered buildings. Again, some of those are people that have actually sent in their registrations but have not sent in their late fees. We are going to start our call-a-thon to register shortly. We do have some ministerial changes to some of the summary orders. On the reconsideration case, the applicant's name was misspelled, so we've corrected that by dropping the extra R. On the second summary case, the word was dismissed, was absent from the last sentence. That's sort of a big one. So, sorry about that. And on the master case, 1197, TR 1197, I emailed that new draft yesterday to change the time period on the top of the second page from 3 months to 7 weeks. Again, all ministerial changes. Some of you noticed and pointed out to me that many of the cases this month sort of have a common theme, and I have called them stalled, settled cases. So these are cases that somebody filed an application, usually for coverage, the unit, building, or protected occupant status. The cases were transferred to OATH during the time that the case was at OATH. The parties settled. Part of those settlement agreements included that the owner would register the building, or the units were people, depending on what the settlement was, and never did. So we took a look at them. They'd been around a while, and we decided to try and move those cases. So we are asking you to issue orders based on the settlements, ordering the landlords to register within 30 days. If they do not, then we would ask you to have us assign an internal dwelling number or the protected occupant status to whatever registration information is necessary so that we can start moving these buildings forward if in fact they have not moved forward. So just so you know, that's what's out there. Any questions on that concept? Yeah.
Yes, I have a number of questions related to those, and I think it's a good policy, and I know that in the 21 cases, this applies to 13 of them by my count, so it's a hefty number. And if you'd like to discuss the principles behind it now rather than do it during the cases, that would be fine with me.
Well, I think if you have general questions, it would be better to just get that out of the way.
Sure, okay. My first question is, the template seems to be that we're saying if the owner fails to register and pay the applicable fees within 30 days, the law board's going to direct the staff to issue an IMD registration number, list the unit as an IMD unit, and the tenant as a protected occupant where applicable. There may be some that are different, and collect applicable registration fees and late fees. And I wonder if we looked at whether there's any, and not so this group, but going forward, if there are a lot of these, if there's any enforcement mechanism, is there something that would trigger a fine in these cases if the owners were on notice?
So we don't actually have anything in the fine schedule that is failure to register. We have failure to renew registration. We also don't have in the fine schedule, and I would like to add that, failure to comply with the order of the board. So I think once we get that all in place, we would be able to do enforcement. But the fact is, the way that the system has been set up, nothing goes forward without that IMD number.
I appreciate that. And obviously also it would be unfair to fine any party without putting them on notice.
Absolutely.
It could be subject to that. The additional question that I would have is that in some of these cases, they're over a year old. In the SIPs, the landlord promised to register within 60 days. Do we have any idea what is causing these to just kind of clog the system?
Theories, yes, but nothing concrete.
Okay. My final question is that in some of these cases, there seems to have been a, I'll register the building if you pay what I think is back rent or what is back rent or whatever. Now, in the case, if that criteria has not been satisfied, is it still the board's intent to go ahead and register the building?
So there are two, I believe there are two of those.
I didn't count, but a couple.
I think in one we definitely know that there was a payment because the landlord did something at a later time, like they entered into another agreement. In addition, in the other case, these are tenants that have been participating in the narrative statement process. So clearly the landlord is including them as part of the process, hasn't raised any objections to being there, et cetera. But okay. Although, yeah.
All right, and the other, no, I think that's really the sum of my general questions. But I think it's a good change insofar as to have these buildings, or these buildings and units just kind of hanging by the doorway and not getting into the process where they're supposed to start doing things. If they promised a year ago to register within 60 days, I think it's a very good step.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we are taking that seriously. We are actually putting together a good program and getting moving stuff forward as long as that we don't have buildings that are just stuck in limbo right around it.
Yes. Let me just take this time to thank our executive director and your staff for giving us an additional 24 hours on the receiving in the cases. It may not seem like a big deal, but it really was helpful, I found, in comparison to previous administrations.
Thank you, Mr. Roach. And we are going to improve that even. All right. Thank you. But please bear with us so we can sort of, so we can get that.
Yes. I would like one other thing. Would you number the cases?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Because I got a little confused when I started.
You are not the only person that said that to me, and I do apologize. Okay.
So, until that comment, that question was perfect.
Now, I have one other related question.
Go ahead.
It's a group, but we're still missing one member. Do we have any idea?
So you're referring to the manufacturing record?
Yes.
We've identified Mayor's office. Our assistants have identified a particular person who I'm at liberty, obviously, to say until the person is spared. So we are hoping in the coming months, hopefully by next month, but there's no guarantee that person will be joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walson. Any other? Thank you, Ms. Walson, for that report. We're going to go through, turn next to the reconsideration calendar, and there's one such case. It's the case of Kyle Doris at 143-155 Rockland Street in Brooklyn, docket number R0348. Ms. Paulson, would you please present the case?
So the original application here sought coverage, Mr. Doris sought coverage under multiple dwelling law 281, subsection 5. The case went to oath for a trial, and there was a report and recommendation from ALJ Casey. And in his report, he had a lengthy discussion as to why Mr. Doris and one other unit, actually, why Mr. Doris's unit should be a covered unit. And then he made basically a summary finding that Mr. Doris should be a protected occupant. And we couldn't really identify any basis in the record as to where that came from. So after the board issued its order finding that the unit should be covered, but Mr. Doris should not, Mr. Doris' attorney filed a request for reconsideration, and it was very specific in terms of pointing out where in the record the issue of protected occupancy status was discussed. In fact, the parties had stipulated on the record on March 3rd of 2015 that if the unit was found to be a covered unit, Mr. Doris should be the protected applicant. So we are asking the board to grant the application for reconsideration and allow Mr. Doris to be a protected applicant.
Does anyone have any questions about this case?
Yes.
This is it.
As we know from the rules, there are four grounds for reconsideration indeed. Papers filed for the applicant cite that this was an erroneous determination. Is that the same ground under which we're making the finding to grant reconsideration?
Yes.
Okay. My question is that, if I recall correctly, the underlying case involved two tenants.
Correct.
Where the same determination, which we're now deeming to be an erroneous determination, was applied to both those individuals and not naming them as protected occupants.
So the problem with that is, first of all, they were separate applications. The other applicant did not file a request for reconsideration. That's number one. Number two is the other applicant's decision was made on papers. It was just based on submissions. There was actually not any argument by, they just argued on paper, so the transcript doesn't have any information on protected occupant status for that person, which is unfortunate, but that's where we're at.
So, however, in Judge Casey's initial report and recommendation, he recommended they both be found to be protected occupants.
Correct.
But apparently, in the case of the other applicant, he was basing that on the papers.
The report, his report and recommendation says that his recommendations concerning that unit and the person are based only on submissions.
Okay. All right. That was my question also. That's a good question. Thank you. Are there any other comments? If not, then is there a motion to accept this case? Thank you, Ms. Waldrever. Anyone who second that? Any seconds in motion? Mr. Rivera, please call the board members.
Mr. Carver?
Yes.
Mr. Barber? Mr. Barber?
Yes.
Mr. Roach?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney?
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Mr. Golden Rivera?
Yes.
Mr. Tactac?
Yes.
Ms. Shelton?
Yes.
Chairperson Thompson?
Yes.
Aiden Faye?
Thank you, Mr. Rivera. We now, there are 16 summary cases. These cases are voted as a group, and they are Hawk, Greg, as receiver, and that's 365 to 369 7th Avenue. So just to make a record straight, that is Manhattan, 7th Avenue, Manhattan, LF0130. The second case, Greg Burgett at 210 Cook Street in Brooklyn, docket number P-0-0007. Number three is David Heyerman at 151 Kent Avenue in Brooklyn, P-0-0017. Fourth case, Don McLean at 365 through 369 7th Avenue in Manhattan, docket number TM-0072. Fifth case involves Davis and others at 111 North 10th Street in Brooklyn, TR-0840. The sixth case involves John L. Sadak and others at 252 Norman Avenue in Brooklyn. And those case docket numbers are TR-1035, 1036, 1037, 1038, 1039, 1040, 1041, 1116, 1135. The seventh case involves Jessica Marisfeld at 156-170 North 4th Street in Brooklyn, TR-1046. Eighth case involves Gregory Levitt, Michael Deladera, and Matthew Feich at 111 North 10th Street in Brooklyn, TR-1073. The ninth case involved Nicola Tranquillino at 278 Broadway in Brooklyn, TR-1124. The tenth case is Robert Price, 70 Commercial Street in Brooklyn, TR-1156. The 11th case involved Grace Loftus, a.k.a. Grace Moon, and others at 210 Cook Street in Brooklyn, TR-1181. The 12th case, Sophie Ioni, 156-170 North 4th Street, Brooklyn, TR-1189. 13th case involves Daniel Jones and others at 54 Traffic Place in Brooklyn, TR-1195. The 4th case involves Sarah Phillips and Dina Ahmad at 75 3rd Street in Brooklyn, TR-1220. And the 15th case involves Gerald Abbott, Allison Schneckley, and Chris Kuzmi at 47-53 South 7th Street in Brooklyn, TR-1266. And the 16th and final case involves Michael Davis at 210 Cook Street in Brooklyn, TR-1279. Does anyone have any questions or comments about this case? Ms. Bonner?
I can't find it now. But I was wondering if 211, unit 211 is included in the recommendation for which, in case number 11. Down on the bottom where you talk about the protected occupancy.
The register with the law? I mean, that separates.
Oh, it's separate.
She's there. It's there on the bottom, right?
Right. Okay. Well, so I didn't register.
She is listed on the bottom.
And then she was included again.
Okay. Yeah, she had a different settlement, so she was taken out.
Of this one?
Yeah.
And then you put her back?
Out. Yeah.
She's back. Mm-hmm. Consolidated.
Yeah.
Good enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rivera. Is there a question? Yes.
I have questions on three cases, and I would also request that we vote separately on case number 3, the retirement, because I plan to vote no on that case.
I'm sorry, what?
Number 3, Protect Document number 17. I just wonder if we could take that case up separately because I plan to vote no.
Oh.
And the two cases that I have questions on are number 6, where we had applications from 9 units at 252 Norman Avenue, and the applicants then requested that their application be withdrawn with prejudice. What follow-up, if any, do we
They have a C of O.
Oh, they have a C of O?
Yeah.
Oh. there's certainly a reason to withdraw an application. Okay. And then the other case I had a question on is number 8. There are two questions. Number 1, I'm not quite sure what the philosophy is behind putting this on the summary calendar.
You would want it on the master calendar?
Well, I just would like to. It seems like it's kind of a controverted case here, but.
So the rules basically state that where there's a settlement, it's going to be on the summary calendar, and that's certainly something that we could consider changing in the future. But right now, the law board's rules actually say that settled cases will be placed on the summary calendar.
Even though in this case we're rejecting the settlement?
Yes.
Okay, because the other cases similar to this where we raise public policy issues, were master calendar. I don't care. I mean, I read them all anyway. But I just wondered if there was a change in philosophy. Okay.
No.
So the larger question is, what's the way forward with this bill?
And you know, Deladera and Fike are out of the picture, so the only issue here is Levitt, and what's going to happen is Levitt. So if the owner were to register the building, is the building registered?
No.
So if the owner registered the building and registered Levitt, then Levitt would be an IND, and the occupancy would be legal, and they could go through the legalization process. But the owner isn't doing that. The owner wants to legalize outside the process.
But he wants to move Levitt.
From one illegal place to another illegal place to another place.
Right.
Right.
But, and there are other units in the building, correct?
At least 2 others,
yeah.
Also unregistered.
It just.
Yeah. Well, I guess I was just, if Mr. Levitt were not moving, how much he just were remaining in the unit when the unit was then made legal? Is that the primary issue here of the agreement? That's the problem?
Well, the issue is that the occupancy is illegal, so how can the board endorse an illegal occupancy?
Right.
Right? That's really what the issue is. So if the owner registered the building and registered the unit in a unit for Mr. Levitt to live in during that time, then Mr. Levitt would be allowed to stay because of the dwelling law.
So we don't care which unit Mr. Levitt gets. If he could be, he can pick and choose just got to stay where he is. Right? That's part of the...
He can't stay in the building, is the point. He can't say to us, I'm going to, you know, still be in the building that doesn't have a residential certificate of occupancy.
If they register.
Right. If they're registered, then it would be an ID and right. His occupancy would be legal.
And he needs to stay in the building.
But he can temporarily relocate somewhere else while construction is happening. There's nothing wrong with that.
So I guess the mystery is, why is the landlord so determined to move Mr. Levitt somewhere else?
Instead of registering.
Well, he's got two units. No, I'm just Mr. Levitt is involved in two different apartments. Two
units. I Googled the building, which I do often. It was almost impossible to figure what space he had, the space he's moving into. And the building was, just one building, three floors, and who knows, everything seemed to be about the same. So it creates a one point in terms of what unit gets covered and what unit doesn't get covered. I don't know what the land was planning to do with that. It just got very confusing looking at the picture of the building and then reading it. Just don't know what to write.
Is it in the back?
The
floor plan? Screens 1200. Relocated space. On the fourth floor.
But then they were going to move him somewhere. That was the first round, and then they were going to move him somewhere else. Right, there's three A, B, and C.
Right.
And then on the next page, relocated space on the fourth floor. So they keep moving him places.
Okay.
So that you, that the owner is just trying to wait it out?
I don't know, honestly. I'm not really understanding why the owner wouldn't register the units. They get protection as well, so they get the right to collect rent. Technically, they don't have now. So it's a puzzling to me as to why they wouldn't register. Is there a premium that should be covered? I don't know that they're interested in that. They just seem to want to take a different path.
Maybe they have bad counsel. Are there any other comments on the summer meeting? So then do we have a motion to accept this case?
Accept
the number three. Accept the number three. We're going to vote on number three. So we're going to vote on all these cases except the number three. Are there a motion to accept those cases? Thank you. And any other? Is there a second motion? Carver, thank you. Mr. Berg, please call the board members.
Mr. Carver?
Yes.
Mr. Barrett?
Yes.
Mr. Ghosh?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney?
Yes.
Ms. Golden Rivera?
Yes.
Mr. Shackler?
Yes.
Ms. Shelton?
Yes.
Shepherdson and Hilton?
Yes.
8 in favor.
Quick question, I apologize, but how many four of the cases that we were just discussing, 111 North 10th Street, how did they obtain a temporary certificate of
occupancy? Are you asking how they obtained a temporary certificate?
Right. I mean, that would be one reason why the owner was compelled to be cooperative in pursuing the law process.
Are you asking us for the path to temporary CO or specifically how they did it here?
Yeah. I mean, it should be, the focus is that it's illegal for the tenants to be in this building, but if they have temporary CO, then...
Also, let me just say that the temporary CO, they had two of them and they both expired, basically. And,
right.
And hasn't been renewed, so...
Right, but how did they get them? Can you get them without going through the law process?
Yes, because if we have not assigned an interim multiple registration number, then there's nothing in the buildings department system to show that it's a lawful building.
And it was zoned for residential.
Well, remember, this building, 111 North 10th, is also the subject of case number 5,
right,
where we're finding a bunch of units to be covered,
right,
and we're ordering the owner to register.
Right.
So that's part of why it also strikes me as this Mr. Levitt.
Yeah. Mr. Levitt is unfortunately not part of that other large group of tenants who seem to be. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Unless there's something about Mr. Levitt's or apartment space that the owner really wants.
Maybe that's where the traders are.
Yeah, that's right.
President, time limits. That's the zoning. Are you asking them about the... What was your question just now?
I guess my question is, because we're focused during the discussion, we're talking about the idea of that tenants, if tenants residing in a building that is not registered, are generally assumed kosher. But if they're getting temporaries, if they've been able to get two temporary certificates of occupancy, then I try to understand, because usually I didn't think that the buildings that were participating in our program were getting temporary certificates.
You're thinking of the letter of no objection. But we can't invoke that because the building's not under our jurisdiction.
Yeah, but how are they getting... So they're zoned for residential?
Right. Well, actually, let me correct myself. So the zoning said unknown here from our records, but the building classification that finance has assigned is the residential condominium. So I don't know where that comes in.
But we're treating it as an eligible building for the other case.
And in 30 days, it's going to be registered.
And that's because it isn't currently residential.
Those north blocks in Williamsburg are where a lot of that new construction is going in, so I'm assuming it's.
Or maybe it's becomes.
Where's city planning?
Trying to get up there. Yeah. All right.
Can we just move that along on this one? And we'll turn now to case number three involving David Pearman at 151 Penn Avenue, Brooklyn, PO0017. Do we have a motion to accept that? Kevin Shelton, thank you. Are there a second? Mr. Carver, thank you very much. Mr. Rivera, please.
Mr. Carver?
Yes.
Mr. Brannert?
Yes.
Mr. Roach?
Yes.
Mrs. Delaney?
No.
Ms. Golden Rivera?
Yes.
Mr. Schechter?
Yes.
Ms. Sheldon?
Yes.
Shepherdson Hinton?
Yes.
7 in favor, 1 no. 1 against.
Mr. Rivera, we now come to the Mass County cases. We have 3 coverage cases. The first case involves tenants of 87-95 Dublin Street. Address is 87-95 Dublin Street in Brooklyn. Document numbers are TR0880, TR1137, TR1185, TR1214, and TR1224. Ms. Cruz, please go ahead and present the case.
Good afternoon, everyone. 41 tenants occupying 29 units at 87-95 Dublin Street filed applications seeking Article 7C coverage pursuant to MDL 2815. After the transfer to oath, the owner settled with all but 14 of the tenant applicants. As part of the settlements, the owner agreed to register with the loft board. For the remaining 14 applicants, the oath scheduled a trial date for December 9th of 2015 by a notice dated November 16th of 2015. Only counsel for the owner appeared on December 9th. In the report, Judge Casey recommended that the coverage claims for the remaining 14 applicants be dismissed without prejudice pursuant to 106L1 of the Loft Board Rules. However, while we agree that the claims should be dismissed, the staff recommends that the board reject the recommendation to dismiss the claims without prejudice pursuant to 106L1. According to the language of 106L1, this section only applies when the notice for trial has not been marked final. In this case, oath marked the trial notice final. Therefore, 106L1 does not apply. Instead of subsection L, the staff recommends that the board consider subsection K4, which applies when an applicant does not appear for a hearing date that has been marked final. With the exception of Robert Weiss, the occupant of Unit 206, none of the 14 applicants appeared for the conference on May 29th or the trial date on December 9th. Robert Weiss appeared on May 29th but failed to appear for the trial date. The staff recommends that the board reject Judge Casey's recommendation and dismiss the claims with prejudice pursuant to 106K4. With regard to the units the owner agreed to register, the staff recommends that the board direct the owner to register these units and to list the tenants as protected occupants and to pay the registration fees required within 30 days. If the owner fails to do so, the staff recommends that the board direct the staff to assign the building an IMD number, list the units as IMD units, list the tenants as protected occupants, and collect the registration fees.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz. Do we have any questions or comments from this?
Just a couple. First off, and if there's an overarching theme that ends this docket, it's our new approach to buildings that promise to register, to not to register. If there's a secondary theme, it seems to be when withdrawal is with prejudice and without prejudice. And I gather from reading this and several other cases that the determining factor is being marked final. We have some examples that counsel provided in one case where the withdrawal was very near the end of the proceeding, but it had not been marked final. So the bright line issue here is the hearing being marked final.
Yes.
Okay. So, and this also appears to be, Dobbin Street appears to be now building with many residential units. So the decision to withdraw, to have the 14 individuals who sought to withdraw, have those be with prejudice, is that against the individual occupant, or is it against the unit?
It's against the applicant, yeah.
It's against the applicant. So if, perchance, somebody else were in one of those units who did not apply, but was there during that period, that individual could still apply?
Yes. All he has to do is be there right now. He didn't have to be there during the window period, as long as he can prove that the unit was occupied.
That they need to provide proof that the unit was occupied. Right. So, again, in the original loft law, the average number of units was 6. Here, we're in a situation where we've got 29 units, where we now have the majority of them under the ambit of the loft law, but a bunch of them not. So, how do we proceed with building these certain when they come into an Arab state? So we turn a blind eye toward the units that aren't registered?
All the units that apply for coverage are actually on the are on the chart. It's the people that we are not granting protected occupant status. So let's say, for instance, unit 103, Alexander Fox is one of those people that we, one of the 14 applicants. The owner agreed to register 103. So the units are covered. It's the occupant that we don't
all have. 29 of the units?
All 29.
So it's just, for example, where 103 is marked unknown, 206 unknown. Okay, all right.
Thank you,
Mr. What happens to those people? I did this is a great mystery when I see this.
I'm sorry.
This is a great mystery to me. Once again, I looked at this building and it's like this. Three-story, yeah. Huge, long building like this. And then some people say, what are they planning to do? Stay there? Not stay there? The unit is covered, but then they said, I gave up. I don't really understand. It's just a mystery.
Are you making a point, or
are
you just,
you know, it's just a comment. It's enormously confusing reading some of these.
I mean, for example, when I mean, so in this instance, this is you folks who've recently come into these positions and have yet to hear me get really like hopped up on the issue of the severance between protected occupant and covered unit. But here's where I think there continues to be a problem, in that now when you have a narrative statement conference, who speaks up for 103, which is unknown, or 208, which is unknown?
I mean, the owner is going to have to legalize them, I guess. And if these people who defaulted and were dismissing their claims are still there, I don't know that they would be able to speak up, because they didn't pursue their claim. I don't know that we necessarily stop them in conference context, but the unit has to be legalized regardless. So it's a question of how much say they will have.
Yeah.
They are giving up that right.
I look forward to expressing my concerns with with you over this in the coming months. But if unknown, 103 doesn't want to supply access, who does the owner file an access order against?
That's a good point.
Yeah, in which case, he doesn't necessarily have to let anybody in, right?
Unknown, Mr. Unknown won't open
the door. That's right. Has not opened the door.
Okay.
Well, that's correct.
And again, this is partly an effort. The board's been grappling with these larger buildings, and I don't proclaim that there's a simple answer. When you were dealing with a six-unit building, and you had six units, and you had a name or two for every unit, it was a clear amount of space.
Can you give me one more second?
Mr.
So, Mr. Barrett, please go ahead and call.
Mr. Palmer?
Yes.
Mr. Barrett?
Yes.
Mr. Roche?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney?
Yes.
Ms. Golden Rivera?
Yes.
Mr. Schachter?
Yes.
Ms. Sheldon?
Yes.
The person Hansen?
Yes.
Yes. 8 in favor.
The third case involves Ethan Goldwater and Jacob Weisskopf at 83 Canal Street in Manhattan. TR 11. TR-1216.
March 7, 2014, the occupants of Unit 203 and 207 at 83 Canal Street filed a joint application seeking coverage for their units pursuant to MDL 2815. Several other tenants in the building also filed their own applications seeking coverage. In the discovery demand dated April 14, 2014, the owner of the building requested documents and information from Mr. Goldwater about Unit 203. On or about September 9th, 2015, the owner's counsel forwarded to the tenant's new counsel a copy of the discovery demand. In the email dated October 19th of 2015, the owner's attorney again requested the information in the discovery demand from tenant's attorney. In a letter dated October 28th of 2015, owner's counsel informed Judge Casey that the information requested for Unit 203 was still outstanding. On November 2nd of 2015, OLA began the trial for the other tenants seeking coverage. The parties agreed that the coverage claims for Unit 203 would be heard on February 19th of 2016. On February 2nd, OLA filed a motion to strike the tenants' pleadings for failure to comply with the discovery demand. On February 9th, the tenants' attorney moved to withdraw the tenants' claim without prejudice. The owner's counsel requested the dismissal of the tenants' claim with prejudice. In the report, Judge Casey recommended that the tenant's claim be withdrawn with prejudice. The staff recommends that the board accept Judge Casey's recommendation. The law court has considered several factors in determining whether the withdrawal should be with or without prejudice, the merit of the application, the timing of the motion to withdraw, and unfair prejudice to the opposing party. To obtain Article 7C coverage, one of the things Mr. Goldwater has to prove is that Unit 203 was residentially occupied for at least 12 consecutive months between 2008 and 2009. As of October 29, 2015, a year and a half after the filing of the application, tenant was still unable to find information about the window period occupancy. According to the letters provided by Time Warner, there's no record of any cable or internet in the unit during the window period. Also on February 9th of 2016, in an unrelated proceeding in Supreme Court, where the tenant sought a judgment declaring that the building and the unit are covered under the civilization law, the tenant's counsel alleged that the unit does not qualify for Article 7C coverage. Based on the tenant's inability to require information and his allegation that the unit does not qualify for coverage, it does not appear that there's a substantial likelihood of success on the merits. The timing of the withdrawal is also a factor that weighs against the granting of the withdrawal without prejudice in this case. Tenant did not provide an explanation for the withdrawal request, nor did tenant explain why the withdrawal request was submitted so long after the filing of after the application, right after the owner's motion to strike, and so close to the start of the trial. Prior to the request to withdraw, tenant's coverage application had been the subject of an answer, multiple requests for compliance with the discovery demand, multiple conferences, a request for documents from Mr. Goldwater, and subpoenas. Tenant's request to withdraw came only 10 days prior to the date of the trial. The staff recommends that the application be withdrawn with prejudice.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz. Do we have any comments in this case? Questions?
Was this marked final?
No.
No, there was no hearing date.
Right. Okay.
Right. There was no default by the applicant.
And in your fourth paragraph, you mentioned that there have been multiple conferences held regarding various coverage applications pending in the building.
Yes.
So there are other coverage applications that are still pending.
Yes, including this one.
Unlike other instances, this was not consolidated?
It was consolidated, but Judge Casey issued a report just on Mr. Goldwater's claims.
Right, okay. and it just, I have to attribute this to Clean Living, but this is the first time I've ever had the pleasure of seeing Mr. Brody's five-page discovery request, which seemed a little excessive and burdensome to me. Is our discovery request now a common feature in covered spaces? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
You don't think so?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, really, like previous marriages and everything but vaccination records, as far as I can tell.
So, OTAS extensive rules about discovery. So, since we don't necessarily have discovery rules, those rules would control, and somebody could move to strike a request for discovery if it was too.
Right. Well, it seems like, for whatever reason, this tenant was not interested in complying with the discovery request.
So the tenant could.
But that may be the case as well. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Lenny. Are there any other comments or questions? If not, then let me ask, is there a motion to accept this? Okay, we have 2 minutes, we have a talk.
First and second.
Michelle and Mr. Copper, a second. Mrs. Clare, would you please
Mr. Copper?
Yes.
Mr. Barrett?
Yes.
Mr. Gross?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney?
No.
Ms. Golden Rivera?
Yes.
Mrs. Shackleton?
Yes.
Ms. Sheldon?
Yes.
Jefferson Hilton?
Yes.
7 in favor, 1 against.
Thank you very much. Well, we've made record time. This concludes our meeting today. Our next meeting will be held here. We brought in the third Pivotal Conference Room on November 17th. 2016 at 2 p.m. Board members, please remember to sign in and amend your attendance.